Oh,
the long intro tonight.
Oh. We barking after dark, baby.
What have y'all got me into?
This is bark after dark. We're barking. Rusty's whimpering.
Oh man,
we've worked this man to death today. What's up, buddy?
Bruce called me at 5 o'clock and I couldn't hear him from the CCR playing. I'm like, wait a minute, we're gonna podcast at 9 o'clock. And
what
Bruce,
was what was the song? What was the CCR?
Bad Moon Rising.
Bad Moon Rising.
Okay.
I was like, Bruce, you got CCR playing? He was like, hey, I'm tailgating. Y'all are not playing around, man.
Rocking the MVP tonight.
Yeah. Look at y'all, man. Trying to get the camp. Try to get the tax deduction for me.
We're dreamers, baby. We're dreamers.
So I can tell it now. I took y'all out to eat. You came to my hometown, took y'all out to eat, gave us beer. So y'all had an official visit to Rome, and I took care of you guys.
Hey, man, listen. That was the first time I'd been to Rome as an adult, and I'll say this. If somebody dropped you into downtown Rome, you'd think you were in, Philadelphia or something. You would think you were in a big city.
Nice. It was nice, man.
And then you step off downtown Rome, and you're like, oh, shit.
Well, the problem is getting to Rome. You know, it's like you got to take two lifts, and 7 hours later, you end up here. But once you get to Rome, everybody that comes to Rome is like, holy shit, that place is nice. Like, what's going on? You know, but nice little hidden secret, man. Matt Luke was up here with his son during the holidays for Georgia Elite Classic, and I had to pretty much drag Matt Luke out of the Rome. I was like, dude, you got to go home, man. You can't stay. You got a family. So he loved
it. It looks like they throw down on that river, though.
God, dude. You don't even know there. Fireworks.
I told the people on the board, if you get over to Giggity's at 4 a.m. today, Rusty Mansell throwing a little private meet and greet from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. this morning. Bojangles biscuits will be served.
So, true story. I know the guy owns Giggity's. And obviously, he's a major, major Georgia guy. Shout out DJ at Giggity's at Broad Street in Rome. Well, Kirby Smart was in Rome like 2 years ago. His son had a tennis tournament, and it wound up getting rained out. His son upset a couple of people, and next thing you know, Kirby Smart spends like 4 nights in Rome in the summer, and he found a wing place that he liked. So dude went like 4 nights in a row, and then Giggity's found out that he didn't come to their place 4 nights in a row, so they called me and cussed me out. I'm like, look, I was with the guy. He liked the other place. That's where he went. So
the handler.
Yeah, so Giggity's, they've kind of been on me. I'm like, look, Coach Moore, don't roll up into town too much. That was an L for you.
Well, we start every show with what you're drinking. I'm drinking the classic, the tequila Topo Chico and lime, and it's poured strong. Little extra splash of tequila in there. So, Bruce, what you got?
Tropicalia tonight to celebrate the arrival. I got a line of them over here on the kitchen table, brother.
Hey, Rusty's. Hey, we got a content plan, and Rusty's got first story in the morning. So, hey, wake up with a sore head if you want to, brother.
Those are going to be ramblings tomorrow morning. You see how long that is? So, if you're not a subscriber for $1, you don't get that many ramblings every day. And I'll be honest with you, some pretty good stuff. So, ramblings are going to be good tomorrow.
Rusty's going to scan them in and post them to the board.
Somebody's about to screenshot this, blow it up, and just post it to Twitter for free.
You can look at my writing and screenshot it. You got eyes. So look, I'm going to disappoint for a second, and I'm going to say that I had a half and half coffee that is gone, but I'm also going to make Jake Rowe's night because I've been holding on something for Jake Rowe for a long, long time, and I didn't give it to him on his official visit. I was going to give it to him when we were employees together again. So I got a 1997 Denver Broncos. That's John Elway, Darrell Davis, Sterling, Shannon Sharp, Steve Atwater, and Bill Romanowski. And listen, all the stickers are still on. Never been open, Jake.
All the stickers are still on.
Everything's on it, dude. From
I've never felt like such a kid in my life.
1997. If you open this damn thing, first night. I'm taking away, but that's your.
Listen, that right there, and my Ronald Acuna bobblehead dollar, my retirement plan.
I was gonna say that's
three Hall of Famers, dude.
That's Henry's college fund.
It's right there. Top row.
Yeah, that's going to get Henry to North Georgia Junior College. There, baby.
I was cleaning out my office and some things and changing up today and ran across this. So I want to show this to you. This is a 1980 National Championship hat.
Ooh.
Trucker mesh. So nobody's getting that one. But I'll just tell you that one's a prized possession. Pretty sweet, huh? 1980. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'll accept a VHS tape of SummerSlam 93 with the poster, please.
I probably have Dusty Rhodes versus – I'll tell you one quick story on wrestling, 30 seconds. So wrestling was obviously big in me growing up, and it was life or death for me. Like, I was Tommy Wildfire Rich, and that was my guy. So one night, Dusty Rhodes wrestled Abdullah the Butcher here in Rome, and obviously Dusty Rhodes was my guy too. And man, I went to that match. My dad took me. I was so pumped. It was a good long one, good bloody one, you know. And the match was over. It was in the night main event. You know, we're stuck in traffic and trying to get out of there. And we go down to the little local gas station about three blocks away. And, man, this big Cadillac pulled up beside me. And it was Dusty Rhodes and Abdullah the Butcher. They walked in and got beer and chicken and got in the car. And trust me, man, it crushed my soul, dude, just to see that. Like, how – two guys be in the same car, like they should absolutely hate each other to death. But
kayfabe is dead.
That was my first disappointment in wrestling. Wrestling is what it called.
Bruce is tonight.
Do we want to? I feel like we're gonna have to save that for a wrestling. We gotta do a whole wrestling show.
But here's the thing. I feel like I gotta tell this with Rusty on here though.
I get it. Yeah, no, it's a great story. So go ahead.
You want to say we can do a wrestling pod now.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
Let's save it. We'll have you on. We'll have you on.
Because here's what I can tell you. Arn Anderson grew up right here.
Oh, yeah.
And I've known Arn Anderson since I was probably 9 or 10 years old. So I can go wrestling with you.
Let's do it. All right.
Maybe not.
We'll have to do it some other night because I've got a great story. Yeah. One of the best you've ever heard about Great American Bash 1992 Albany Civic Center.
Oh, boy.
And I'm telling you, it is an all-timer. It is 100% true. I don't have to embellish a single word of it. It is exactly as it happened.
I've got a great one too. I found out the other night. I went to a pay-per-view one time. I saw a match that people would pay. I mean, it would headline WrestleMania. Now it was like a third card match. It was awesome, man. So
yeah, let's say that because I'm all about a wrestling pod, man.
Well, Rusty, first off, welcome in, man. I know it's been a long day, but a great day over at Dogs HQ for sure. Exciting for everybody, I know. We've talked a lot about, you know, I mean, listen, everybody in the market who follows you knows you, what you can do. But the podcast that we do here is about kind of diving into the backstory of you and where you're from, what you're about. Listen, you're one of Rome's great ambassadors, I would say, for sure. So, I mean, just give us the backstory, man. Rusty Mansell. Where does Rusty Mansell come from? And how does Rusty Mansell find himself owning the hottest Bulldog side on the
– Well, let me throw this in there too, because here's another thing layer I want to put on this is because I came up – you know, I was a Georgia fan growing up, and I came up on Steve Patterson's, you know, UGASports.com. Like, I mean, you know, from the Dog Vent early days, right? Yeah. And, you know – on this show, we don't care. We talk about everybody. I'm working in this business before I even know who Rusty is. Like yeah. I was so locked in on that. I knew a little bit about Dean and a little bit about Chad after Chad had gone to work with Dean and work with Scout, but I didn't get to know Rusty. And then all of a sudden someone's like, man, Rusty Mansell's reporting. And I was on the job maybe a month. It was literally like January of 2012. Is when it was. And I'm like, damn, this guy's got info, man. And like, you know, and y'all had so much free stuff back then at 24/7. And then, you know, I got to know you a little bit. I saw you out at some spots. We met and, you know, next thing I know I'm working with you, but like, for me, you came really just completely out of nowhere. And I know, you know, you're going to talk about what happened with the site and when that took off.
Well, and I guess since Roe gave his Rusty Mansell, intro story. I guess I should give mine too. So when Ro left Rivals, I took over his spot over there. And buddy, those, you want to talk about, somebody commented with the hard times, daddy. Those were hard times, daddy. I mean, going up against Jake Rowe and Rusty Mantell was not something I relished very much. I had Chad Simmons over at Scout at the time.
Oh, man.
And it was, man, it, you know, I was relying a lot on my ability to create HTML because my website looked good. I could do that. And that was about all I had to offer. But I will say this, Rusty, you were always really super cool to me. Like even from the get-go, when we first met each other, you were always, you know, more than willing to talk. And really, I feel like you and I became pretty fast friends.
Yeah, man. And that's one thing I've said from the entire time, you know, the Georgia market, everybody wants to try to turn it into an Alabama Auburn deal. You know, it's not, we got a lot of great sites in this market. The one I just left is a great site. The one you guys were at Rivals before is a great site. Dean Legge has a great site. Doggy Mason has a great site. The Georgia market is really different where it can be so many different people and so many different places. It's just a huge fan base, and it's a great time to cover Georgia. So I've never been that guy. I've never had an issue with anybody. I've never been that guy that goes, you know, I'm going to kick his ass today. That's not – I mean, I get up and want to do my job and do the best I can, but I've always kind of stayed in my lane. I've been more mature. Now, at 22 years old, I probably wouldn't fight everybody, but, you know, certainly when I got this job, real quick, you know, for me, Jake mentioned, you know, Steve Patterson, obviously that was the site, you know, back in the mid 90s, and the old Grapevine was one of the first ones, but really and truthfully, man, my grandfather got me into recruiting, and he would bring me these little papers. And he would bring me these papers at the family reunion deal because he lived in Commerce. So when he come to Rome, you know, four or five times a year or whatever, he would always bring me these little, I don't even know who these papers were, but it would tell you all the top prospects. I'm talking about, I was a high school kid and I'm following it. Like, but I remember, and I've told both of them this, I got to tell Andre this summer when he got put into the Georgia High School Football Hall of Fame. I think the recruitment of Andre Hastings and Garrison Hurst really piqued my interest because Andre Hastings, if you don't know the younger people, go back and look at that Sports Illustrated when he's in that phone booth and that whole story on him. I've had a great conversation with him about that. But Garrison Hurst and those two guys really turned me on to recruiting because I kind of realized then that quote unquote five stars and their impact and how good those guys were at Georgia. Then you take Eric Zier, who was in my class, my senior year, we were same class. Eric Zier was a guy that obviously had the nation. He was the first guy that anybody knew that was a mid-year. So you look at Andre Hastings, what a great story. He had to wear number one. He had to be able to spat his shoes, and he wanted a big screen TV in his room, and he got all three at University of Georgia.
That was back in the day when they only let five players spat their shoes because they wanted the logos on the side of them.
Notre Dame wouldn't let him do it. Notre Dame wouldn't let him number one in Notre Dame. Well, I'll tell you this, Lou Holtz, they were going to make him live with a regular student, and everybody did that. Well, he didn't go to Notre Dame because of that. And so if you want to go back and look at some stories, go back and look at Andre Hastings. Those guys kind of, you know, got me involved. And then at that point, I was hooked. I've watched Forrest Davis every Saturday morning. I have every magazine. I got all kind of magazines over here that I could pull up one day and show you guys. So, you know, I was a guy that played high school football. I loved it. Was I ever going to play college football? Hell no. But my experience playing high school sports, it gave me fuel to want to be a part of something. So, you know, I go to college, kind of, you know, fiddle fart around, didn't really know what I wanted to do. And, you know, got married, had a couple of kids. And next thing you know, I had to be in the workforce. I had to be a man. So I did that. I actually worked in a steel mill from 1997 to 2001. I was in a steel mill where it would melt your boots off of your shoes if you walked into wrong place, and learned to trade about programming robots. I went to an 8-week school in Dayton, Ohio, and learned how to program. It led me to another job, another career, and stepped up and got into management for a company called Pirelli Tires. Everybody's heard of that. It was a great job. I did 9 years, but I got a phone call one day from a good friend of mine, and he didn't do it long because he was a high school coach, but a guy named Burke Hayes called me. He said, Rusty, I just took a job with scout.com. I said, what? And he goes, yes, that scout.com. And I go, for real? And he goes, yeah, it's like 2007. He said, dude, I know you're hooked on recruiting. I said, absolutely. He goes, well, I'm working Under Armour camps. Do you want to come start doing this with me? I said, hell yes, I'm in. So literally there for about 2 years, I would go with him to Under Armour camps, and I would chart 40s, and I would help register kids, and I would do anything I could, and I didn't make one single dime. And there were times when my wife at the time was like, look, you got to quit this junk, you know. And finally, one day, Scott Kennedy, who ran scout.com, came up to me and he said, dude, you really want to do this, don't you? And I said, yeah, I'm very interested in it. So he said, I'm going to give you a part-time job. And somewhere, one of these drawers over here, I got the check. So my first check was like $111. And I was like, holy shit, man, I've made it. Like,
that's what I make.
I'm getting paid to watch high school football. Like, you couldn't stop. At that point, you couldn't stop me. And I did part-time work for Scout. Dean Leggy gave me gave me an opportunity. I worked part-time with him and started filming games on Friday nights. And the more I got, I couldn't get away from it. And I had a great job. I moved myself up into management and had a great job 5 minutes from my house and could have done 30 years at Pirelli. Great, great company to work for. But my heart was in recruiting and covering recruiting. So when that happened, probably in January of 2010, I got a phone call one night from a 615 area code named Shannon Terry.
Yeah.
He said, hey, look, I've been watching you for a while and I've heard some stuff about you. And I was like, who are you? And kind of got off the phone with him. I was like, wait a minute, I think that dude's a big deal. He said, I'm going to call you in a few months. I got some stuff going on. And of course, I never thought I'd hear anything back from it. And sure enough, about May of 2010, Shannon Terry called me. He said, look, man, I'm starting this new company and I want to put you on this Georgia site. And I was like, look, man, I'm already getting paid part-time. He goes, I'm not talking about part-time money. I'm talking about full-time, full benefits. Here's your opportunity. I was like, dude, I'm in. And that's kind of how it started for me. You know, I was volunteering Under Armour camps. And I tell these young people, they ask me all the time, I put myself in front of the right people. You know, I kept going and kept doing and trying to get my foot in the door. And fortunately enough, I was able to do it, you know, through Scout. And then Shannon gave me the opportunity of a lifetime to go full time with 24/7 Sports. And that lasted until about 8:05 last night, 12 and a half years. And again, he changed my life. And I hope it changes all of our life with the decision we all made to come here at Dogs HQ. And that's kind of how I got from there to here.
I tell you what, man, you had told me that story before. I mean, I knew when Shannon, you know, started everything up that I would have an opportunity at some point because I knew I was on good footing with him and that we kind of saw eye to eye on some things. But I knew when you told me that story long ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, mm-hmm. I said, I'll go wherever Shannon Terry goes because of what he saw in you when, you mm-hmm. know, you know, the way you tell it, you didn't know that you really had that in you either. No. He not only did he see it, he brought it out. And then you've become what you've become. I've hitched my wagon to you in a lot of ways too. Like, I mean, I don't ever really want to work with anybody else. So, because A, I enjoy it. And B, you're just so good at what you do. But, you know, the funny thing about the parallels and stories, you talk about Andre Hastings. Mine was Marcus Stroud and that Sports Illustrated cover. I hope Palmer was able to run it down. I shot him a text while he was doing it, but man, that Marcus Stroud cover, that's what got me into it, like forever and ever. Because the funny thing is we ran up with that monstrosity of a human being at Belk in Valdosta Mall about 2 weeks after that happened. And he turned and he looked at my dad. Now, my mom is a firebrand, okay? My mom will tangle with anything. He turned and he looked at my dad. My dad had a Georgia hat on. He said, hey, see, look. And she goes, what's wrong with him having a Georgia hat on? And my dad was like, 5'7", 5'6" and a half, you know, at the time, about 200 pounds. And Marcus Stroud standing there at 6'6", you know, 270. And he said, Bonnie, you need to shut your mouth. First thing he told me, he said, Bonnie, you need to shut up right now. He goes, we're not equipped to handle this. But he was just like, no, ma'am. I'm sorry. I signed with George. I said, Mama, that's Marcus Stroud. He was just on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He goes, yeah, man, you know your stuff. And then the funny thing was I went to football camp, Jim Donnan football camp, a couple years later after he was on campus. And my mom and dad came and got me at Old McWhorter Hall. Oh, I know you've been out in front of Old McWhorter Hall because I've heard some stories about Broham Cadillacs, okay?
I've heard that a few times, the old man.
Yeah, we're walking from McWhorter Hall to the car, and he comes over and stops us. He's like, hey, y'all remember me? And I was like, dude, do you remember us? What are you talking about? Nicest dude ever. I didn't see him again until the Athens until the Hall of Fame golf tournament over at the Athens Country Club whenever he was stuff was smelling weird coming from his golf cart.
You know who fueled Chad Simmons in this, to get him in this business? You know who he grew up with?
Who's that? Oh, yeah, Hines Ward.
Hines Ward were best friends. And Hines Ward, a lot of his coaching stuff and the visits back then at Chad's house, because, you know, Hines' mom worked second, you know, she worked second, two or three jobs. So that kind of fueled Chad. He saw the process and how cool it was and kind of, you know, the knowledge. So, you know, just being around some things like that, you know, kind of set the tone for Chad Simmons, who, you know, obviously one about, you know, a guy for our company as well, and obviously somebody that we all very much respect. But I've traded stories with Chad, and man, he's got some good ones through Hines for sure.
Oh yeah, for me, it was I kind of came into it a little bit backward. I was obsessed with the NFL draft, and I loved the evaluation process and the whole thing of that. And then I remember the very first tape that I really got into was Alec Ogletree. And I can sing you Washing Powder Money by OJ the Juice Man, which was laid over the top of his YouTube highlights. And I probably watched those things 100,000 times, man. And I was like, this is a dude right here. This is a guy. And it was that for me, that was what hooked me in. I never thought I'd get to do it. I mean, but, you know, I took the Rusty Mansell route and started hanging out with a guy who was doing it and volunteering. So
that's what got me there. I knew some people, but never really crossed my mind that, hey, you know, I could get into this, because, you know, those guys were young and they were trying to cut their own teeth as well. But those times were meeting Hines, and we'll get into a story one day when about Hines Ward and how I had probably one of the most top secret bits of his information ever. And if I'd have known, wanna know now, to bet my entire house against Georgia that weekend. My heart was too much Bulldog at the times. I was like, we're good. No, and they got beat by 38 and the spread was 3. So yeah, that wouldn't have been the wisest decision I ever made. But I see Dylan Brooks here saying he is a Pepperell grad and saying I carried, what do you say, Ken Irvin to the state championship. I can assure you Ken Irvin played 10 and a half years in the NFL. And Ken is one of my lifelong best friends. I had a long talk today and have some really cool times with him. The one thing I did was ride that man's coattails for 15 games, I can assure you. Crazy story. He wanted to go to Georgia, man. They didn't sniff him, and he wound up being a four-year, two-year All-American and played 10 and a half years in the NFL. So he was a huge, huge Georgia guy. They could have used him at corner back in those early 90s.
Hey, the only thing I got to claim to fame about any pros from my hometown is I saw Tyreek Hill on his grandma's hip when he was about 3 years old. So I remember that. That's about it.
You see Ken right there. He still looks like he can play. We go out to eat. The dude gets like, he'll get, it's like, make sure there's no butter on it. Make sure it's steamed. I'm like, dude, can I get a cheeseburger and put the gravy on top? He's like, hey, man. So I have to be careful eating around him, because he's got one of those sleep chambers. So he takes care of himself. That dude's going to live to be 120.
Rusty, I'm interested, man. You know, you've been around it so long, and you've been through a lot of them. There's got to be one, right? I think everybody has one that just kind of jumps off the page to them when they think about it. A recruitment that you covered that just, when you think like this was the ultimate thing, what is it, man? What's the Rusty Mansell one?
Ultimate crazy or ultimate like end up being good for Georgia?
Let's say ultimate crazy. Let's start there.
Probably Laramie Tunsil.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know,
and I think Jake Rowe might start nodding here in a second.
Yeah. And it was crazier for him than it was for me.
Oh, yeah. 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 Tunsil was, that one was done. And so, signing day back then was in February on that first Wednesday. Back in the day, we only had one. So I had gone down to see him the night before Georgia Florida played that year.
Yeah, we were down there on the sideline. Me, you, my brother, Will Friend, John Lilly.
Bunch of people were there, yep. Yeah. And I had seen him that summer. That's back when we could go to camp and those type things. I saw him as a junior. And I came down probably about 2 weeks before signing day, because that point, those kids, they won't, if you'll go see them, they'll talk to you back then, but they weren't going to answer a phone call. You had to call them back then. There wasn't no DMs really they're going to answer. I go down to see Laramie. I remember sitting there outside the gym and I said, hey, you know, what do you think? And he goes, man, I'm going to Georgia. And I said, anything, no other school? He goes, it's done, man. I already told the staff. And he actually showed me his phone. And you know when he verbally committed to Georgia, to the staff? The night Alvin Kamara played in the Georgia Dome in the state championship that year back in December. So he had been a solid commit. And back then, that carried a lot of weight. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't see a lot of changes. And so he had verbally committed then. He actually showed me the text. He goes, look, and this is when it was. And I was like, dang, man, that's crazy. And, you know, I saw all the reaction from the coaches. And so for about 2 weeks, I wasn't going to, you know, I kept writing, look, I think this guy's going to Georgia. And so that Thursday was Georgia's one visit. Will Friend, Mike Bobo, John Lilly, Mark Rick, all those guys. Well, on Friday, Ole Miss was going to come in, and then they were trying to get him to come on campus that weekend, that last weekend. So I'd met some people at his high school, and I called down there and said, hey, look, is anything going on with this? And he goes, dude, he's not – Ole Miss is trying, but he's not going to Ole Miss. And then heard some rumblings about his brother and those types of things and scholarship and his brother and all that kind of stuff. So I called back that Friday morning. They're like, dude, he don't even want to talk to this staff. Like, he's not going to Ole Miss. So I felt good there. You know what I mean? And so at that point, I was like, it's good. Friday afternoon That was Thursday. Georgia was in on Wednesday. Ole Miss was on Thursday. And I'll tell you why I know that. Because I went on the Bill King show Friday morning back in the day, and I was doing my little spot. And I got a phone call from a very, very, very trusted source. And Ole Miss had been in that Thursday night. They're in home. And the source told me, said, he's going to Ole Miss. It's over. We're not getting him back. And I said, dude, there's no way, like, this late. And sure enough, like, it was done. It was done. And I'll tell you this. He talked to Georgia's staff the night before signing day till probably 3 a.m. And when I woke up around 6, I still thought when he came on ESPN that Wednesday around 3 p.m., that he was going to go to Georgia. But credit to whoever, they didn't let him go to school that day. And he didn't come to school till about 2:30. So nobody got a chance to talk to him. Nobody got a chance to get in front of him. He walked in that building about 2:30, and about 3:05, he went live on national TV, and he went to Ole Miss, and the rest is history. So, you know, that one was crazy. It was wild. Regardless, he was one of the best offensive tackles. Yeah. And I'll tell you this, and I think both of you will agree. Had Laramie Tunsil gone to Georgia, I don't know what would have happened for the future, because I'll tell you this, they don't lose those two Missouri games because they got a left tackle that can block those guys.
Yeah.
And Laramie Tunsil could have single-handedly changed a lot of, you know, trajectory with Georgia. Not saying that Kirby Smart wouldn't have ended up at Georgia at some point, but who knows what would have happened with Mark Rick could have played and maybe won another SEC championship. But Laramie Tunsil was the best player in that class. He would have been number one had somebody not freaking sabotaged him on that night. But I'm pretty sure he is still the highest paid left tackle in the NFL. And he is a hell of a player. I've never seen a human being at a 2-point stance. His butt is 6 inches off the ground.
Yeah, he could get his femurs parallel with the ground. It was unreal. I still tell people to this day, because I saw Champ Bailey play in high school against Atkinson County. Yeah. I saw Charles Grant play in high school against Hawkinsville. Charles Grant in high school was still the most amazing thing I've ever seen. But Laramie Tunsil is right there in that same breath. And listen, man, as far as when me and Rusty were on separate teams, I don't run the 100 anymore. But if we were 100-meter guys, Rusty was like a 10-3 guy, and I was like a, you know, 11-1 guy. But there were a couple of recruitments, like maybe two or three, where I could run a 10-4, and I could hang in there with Rusty. You got to be there. And Laramie Tunsil was one of them. I had good sources on that one. Yeah. And I'll spill mine because he's nowhere near the program anymore. I remember John Lilly calling me that morning, that Friday morning. Yeah. And I hadn't even reached out to him. Him and I had just been talking about it. And John called me and he goes, hey, have you ever seen the movie Dumb and Dumber? And I said, yeah. He goes, you know that? He said, you know that where he says, so you're saying there's a chance? He said, yeah. He goes, we don't have that with Laramie Tunsil. That's what he said.
I can tell you right now that the call I got Friday morning wasn't from Lilly, but it was close. And it was blankety blank. He's gone. He's going to Ole Miss. And I was like, man, they're overreacting. And
yeah, John Lilly, man, I will say this. You know, John, one of the things about getting to know him is he's just – you want everything to go right for that guy.
Oh, great guy. Oh,
yeah, the best dude ever.
Yeah, great guy.
And when he said – when he told me, he goes, all that hard work, he said 2.5, 3 years of just – you know, evaluating, you know, we evaluated this kid. We were on him first. We recruited him harder than anybody. So we outworked everybody for this kid. We're not going to get him. Yeah, he said this is destroying.
That was a wild one. And we'll get into it, but going to Seattle and getting Jacob Eason when he basically recommitted.
Oh yeah.
I'm standing there in Seattle. By the way, I missed a flight. That's another whole story. I get up there.
I remember that.
That was a bad day for me.
Missed a flight.
Yeah, that was a bad day for me when you were standing in Seattle. That didn't feel good.
So I'm standing there, and nobody's there. And I mean, thankfully, his dad said, "Hey, Rusty, you've been covering him for a while. If you want this story, come to Seattle. You'll get it." I said, "I'll be on a plane tomorrow." And I went, and I missed the morning flight. So thank goodness, a little behind. I caught the second flight. Got there. Nobody was there. I walked in. I was like, "This is fantastic." Yep, Lake Stevens, Washington.
Lake Stevens, baby.
And first thing I'll tell you about Lake Stevens, I didn't realize there was 5,500 students in that school. So there's no parking. So I basically parked in Seattle and walked 40 miles into the school. So I'm sitting there, Jacob Eason, you know, he hasn't said it to me yet, but he knows who I cover. And he walked up, he said, "How you doing, Mr. Rusty?" I said, "Hey, Jacob, how you doing?" He goes, "Look, I'll when I get done talking to my team here, I'm going to give you an interview." I said, "Okay." I said, "Do what you need to do." I'm standing there and his dad walks by and he said, "You talk to Jacob?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You want to go in?" I said, "I'm not doing it." He's talking to his team. And Jacob came up and he goes, "You came all this way, come in here with me." So I'm like, okay. Luckily, I thought about it and I turned my phone on. I was like, you know what? What if he's telling him he's staying? So he walks in and Bert, he was thanking his team because he was Gatorade National Player of the Year.
Yeah, that's right.
He was thanking his team. And he goes, "Oh, by the way, I'm staying at Georgia." And for them, they kind of clapped, you know. He goes, I'm going to go to Georgia." And everybody kind of clapped, you know, and I'm like, holy moly. So I start backing up, you know, and I'm trying to slide by some guys. And I'll never forget, I look at my phone and I have zero signal because you're in a concrete, you're in a concrete building. I can't call anybody to say, "Hey, break this story right now." I used the last 40 of my entire life, and I ran down a hall at Lake Stevens, Washington, and went out the hall, and I ran onto the first what I've seen high school with artificial turf, and I ran to dead center field at Lake Stevens High School, and I still had no signal. I couldn't even make a call, and I looked at God. I said, "God, I've come all the way, man. Can you give me 2 bars? Just give me." And I kid you not, I had the video, which was about 50 seconds. And for whatever reason, I got a couple of bars and I got it to YouTube, just uploaded it. And I called the 24/7 office and I said, "He just committed to Georgia, run it. I have no signal. I don't care. It's done. I'll call you in 20 minutes. And I didn't even know what was going on because I went back in the building, had no signal. Nobody had any signal. But I remember coming back out an hour later and getting my phone and it just exploded because all the text messages. But they were able to pull the YouTube and break the story that he was staying. So that was kind of cool deal. But I remember thinking, man, I have no signal. I came up here for nothing.
Eason was a pretty open dude, man. I mean, like in terms of 5-star quarterbacks, guys of his stature, he was a guy who would talk for sure.
Still a great guy. Still a great guy. He still texts me. He's in a couple weeks ago. He texted me from he was in Nashville. He's like, "Hey, dude, I'm up here in your city and listen to some country." He loves. I tell you what was funny. His dad would always say, he goes, "What in the hell is going on with these pine trees in Georgia?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "My son loves them." He goes, "Country music and those damn pine trees. And you got my son all the way across the state, you know." So he was kind of a simple dude. He's dating a young lady for a long, long time from here. So he's playing in Carolina and. Great guy, and I'm still happy for him being.
Spends a lot of time with Georgia native Isaac Rochelle, from what I understand. A kid that went to Eagles Landing. They're really good buddies.
they're very close. And I think when Georgia won the national championship this time, I think he tweeted something like, you know, go dog or something like that. It just tells you what type of person, and I've heard Kirby personally talk about it in a private setting, and how Jacob Eason handled that situation.
Yeah.
And that loss against Alabama. And you remember, he did not walk in that locker room until Jake Fromm came off, and he walked out of that locker room knowing that was the last time he was ever going to wear a Georgia. He knew that. He knew it was the last time he was ever going to wear a Georgia uniform, and he walked off the field with Jake Fromm. Says a lot about that kid.
Yeah. Yeah, and he didn't cause any kind of disturbance. I mean, you heard nothing about him being unhappy or anything like that. He soldiered up and did what he was supposed to do. And, you know, listen, I don't fault these young kids, these 18 to 22-year-olds, for getting their ass on their shoulders a little bit and getting frustrated. I probably would, too, at that age. But what I can do is I can have a lot of respect for the ones that absolutely just don't, you know, that don't get frustrated and do all that. Are you ready to get to the questions of all questions?
We can dive in if you're ready.
They're not that special, Rusty. We're not
that special. I feel like Rusty's gonna have a good one.
Though. I do too. This question was made for him. Question was made for Rusty Mansell.
All right. So Rusty, my question to everybody
is what brand of jock strap did you wear in high school?
No. Listen, part of the job, right, is traveling on the road, staying in some places. Mm-hmm. The worst hotel room Rusty Mansell has ever stayed in was blank.
Does that have to be job related or like?
No.
Ever. Just ever.
College spring break?
Could get you, sure.
All right. So college spring break. And it's a well-known Georgia person, I'll say that. For whatever reason, we decided to go to spring break a night early. And we're like, we can't handle it. Well, back in the mid-90s, if you go to Panama City, you have reservations at wherever, but there's no getting reservations. Everything's booked up. So we roll down there at about 9 p.m. night before. We're supposed to check in our other place, and we're pumped. And we're like, we'll find something. Well, we didn't find anything. So a little while later, I'll never forget this name of the place. We stayed at the Cleopatra in Panama City. And when I tell you, you seen that scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles where they wake up in that one bed that's just soaking wet? And this,
swear to God, that's exactly what I was thinking about when you said that.
Yeah, so that's basically what that room looked like. And I remember looking over, and dude, Shu was over here, and I saw, I don't know if it was a cockroach or an iguana come out of my man Shu, and I said, "Hey, dude, hey, over there. What, something's in your shoe, man?" And I'm telling you, this dude came out of his bed, and we were gone out of that room in 30 seconds. I'm talking out the door like bank robbers. I mean, it was the biggest bug I've ever seen in my life. And I think we drove straight to the car. We wouldn't spoon it. No, we had two beds. We had two different beds. Might have been twins, dude. I'm telling you. But Cleopatra, man, I'm telling you, Panama City, that place is probably a 30 for 30 one day. But I'll never forget staying there. I've stayed in some crazy places on the road, but I've always kind of been, you know, kind of picky about where I stay. I can't really remember being too bad, but I'll never forget Panama City that one night at Cleopatra. And we still talk about that, me and my buddy, on that one. That was not the best decision we've made.
You probably had to know going in that anywhere named Hotel Cleopatra was not – It's not going to turn out well for anybody.
You got to understand the mind frame. It's just get to that salt air and just get to Club La Vila, you know. So, you know, those days were, whew, it's a miracle that everybody's still walking. It's like one of my old bosses called me. He was an English guy. He's a great dude. He called me one night and said, "Bloody hell, I just saw you on TV. I was so proud." And the police wasn't involved. I kind of feel that way after some of those trips in the 90s. But Cleopatra Hotel in Panama City, man, that was without a doubt. I don't even know what that bug was, probably registered on endangered species, because it came out of a man's shoe, and it was about to tie us both up.
Everybody remembers the worst one, I'm telling you.
That was the worst one.
Yeah, everybody remembers where. I think Ross Dillinger was the one that told us it was in Tuscaloosa. He had taken his dad to an Alabama game or something, and they tried to find one at the last minute, and they found one. It was rough.
Oof. Oh, mine! I've told mine was Mason Smith
dude. I went down to go see him down there in what was the town he's from?
Louisiana for sure.
It's like not New Orleans, Louisiana. Yeah. It's the other part.
Real gumbo.
Yeah. I love Louisiana. I love Louisiana. It's a cool place. Don't get me wrong. There's not really a ritzy part of Louisiana.
Houma. I was in Houma.
Yeah.
And blood on the sheets, hair dryer caught on fire, crushed water bottles under the bed, brother. I got there at 3 a.m. and I was like, I'm not even going to fight it. I just took the sheet. I took the blood covered sheet off, threw it to the side, and I just laid on the top of the mattress and got 4 hours of sleep.
Dude. Ooh, man. Oh, man.
Blood on the sheets. That'd have been the end of it for me.
Dude, I slept in a car, man.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't sleep in the car instead of the Hotel Cleopatra.
Dude, we didn't realize until the light hit that there was a damn dinosaur in there with us.
Something prehistoric.
You know, when all you right, walk, my question, walk in and trip over the shag carpet, it should have been the damn warning sign.
Yeah. Well, hey, my question is, you know, we ask everybody this. Mine is, all right, listen, let's just put ourselves in a scenario here. They have found you face down, dead in a ravine somewhere. Mm. You're standing above your body, and you get to arrange your own funeral. Who's performing? Oof. It can be anybody. It can be music. It can be a comedian if you want it. Mm. You can have Creflo Dollar do the sermon if you want. I don't care.
Jake Rowe can get up there and tell lies about you.
Yeah. Mm. I wouldn't tell a lie about Rusty.
Man, that's a tough one. I'm going to show my age a little bit. Obviously, and we'll have to tell this. Well, tell this is a completely different story one night because I know where we're going to go with this, and I'm fascinated by that deal. I actually text him that day it happened. Without a doubt, it had been Prince, if I could. So we'll talk about Jake Roush having to go undercover at FBI, you know, witness protection for one night.
We're still knocking on the door that the estate's not calling, brother.
Brian Bivens, I just saw Motley Crue, and bless their hearts, they were awful. But
dude, Vince Neil looks rough.
Vince Neil has seen better days, man. I think he stayed at Cleopatra still. So music wise, you know, for me, like Stone Temple Pilots, Scott Weiland is no longer with us. So it kind of hurts. Foo Fighters, you know, with Taylor gone, that was a great band I saw live. I'm still a Pearl Jam guy, old school, Eddie Vedder and those guys. I've seen them a lot of times live. If I had to go like new age kind of country guy, for me, it'd be Eric Church. I think he is fantastic. And Luke Combs, man, Luke Combs has played 100 times in Rome. I saw that dude play in front of 20 people. And I was like, dude, this dude's large, man.
Yeah.
he will stop that with his voice in a second. Like he shuts you up. And I saw him play it. I saw a highlight from the other night. He played Nissan Stadium in Tennessee, in Nashville, and sold it out 2 nights in a row. And his thing was, if you got a dream, do it. Because I'm a 300-plus pounder. I just sold this bitch out twice.
Nice.
And I love that. You know, about like he owns who he is, and that's who he is. But ultra talented, man. I've seen Luke Combs play here a couple of times. I actually saw Luke Combs with standing shoulder to shoulder with Sam Pittman. Funny story there. We turned over and I said, Coach Pittman, I think that's Ben Cleveland right there. He looks over and Ben Cleveland, they kind of hold their beer up together and kind of nod, going about their business, man. That was a fun one.
I will. I'll never forget you saying once that Jake Roush looks like he's always dressed to go to a Pearl Jam concert.
Yeah. Yes. So I saw Pearl Jam in like 97 or 98, not something at Lakewood, Atlanta. And I remember thinking, dude, I hope they're not lip syncing this stuff, man, or backtracking, because it sounded great. I was like, something's going on. So Eddie Vedder singing, and all of a sudden you see this guy flash across the stage and tackling. And you can hear the mic drop. So you knew it was live. It was Dennis Rodman. And Rodman's hammered. Like I know it's a surprise. He's like hammered.
Yeah.
So, you know, he ran with Pearl Jam, you know, pretty hard. So Yeah, you look at Eddie Vedder there in the front. They've seen better days. That's how I look. The guy on the right over there, I looked like Eddie Vedder this morning. That's me on the right over. I'm just holding on with no sleeves and a mullet right now. So
that's how you feel on the inside. There's a video. There's a photo, a meme of a smoking chimpanzee that Roos always talks about. That's how he feels.
Yeah, it's a monkey smoking a cigarette, and I'm like,
yeah, it's a chimpanzee smoking a cigarette. How I feel. So, all right, now I got to pin you down on this, okay, because I'm a Big J journalist. All right, anybody, any era, you can take it, anybody, any era, who's it going to be? Is it going to be, is it Prince 91? Who is it?
Like one musician?
Yeah.
Who's
doing that funeral?
Man, I have a hard time not having Prince play Purple Rain.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you've seen it. You guys, I tweeted a couple weeks ago. Bruce has probably seen it, but. You get a chance to go watch something and watch the backstory on Jimmy Fallon talk about it. At the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary party, and Prince was there about 4 a.m. They finally got him convinced to play a song, and everybody was playing songs. Bruce Springsteen,
yeah,
everybody's there playing. Jim Carrey, I mean, it's a Chevy Chase, a who's who in that crowd. And they finally convinced him to play a song. And dude didn't want to do it. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. He gets up there and grabs guitar and plays about two verses of Let's Go Crazy. And if you want to watch an alpha dude completely shut down a room, look at Chris Rock and Chris Tucker and Jimmy Fallon and Chevy Chase and Jim Carrey. Wait till they show them. And they're all just standing there. Everybody's mouths are wide open, just shocked. And when you talk about an ultra talented guy, I mean, I knew it was 5'3", but you know, you watch a guy that can absolutely tear up a guitar, write music, sing songs, ultra, ultra talented. In my world, Prince was a dude.
Grab that group, that whole room by the throat.
I don't know if it's a true quote or not, but I've so often heard it said that, like, somebody asked Eric Clapton one time, like being the greatest guitar player, and he was like, "You should just ask Prince."
Yeah, dude, he played in a forum one time. I got lost several nights in a Prince YouTube, and he played the forum one night in L.A. And dude just sat on a stool with a guitar in front of 18,000 people, and nobody moved. Like, he interacted, he played songs. Like, that's insane, man, to do that. And not only the Super Bowl deal is another whole story.
Oh my God.
You know what's crazy? You bring up something right there, and obviously we're running out of time here, but you bring up something that I want that just kind of struck a chord with me about being in LA for the national championship game. You know, we're riding the bus over to wherever we're going for the thing, or we're going downtown at some point to do media day, because we didn't do that over in Inglewood. We did that more towards the downtown area. And we ride by the forum, and there are dudes in that bus, you know, from 45 to 60 that are like, "My God, it's the forum. My God.
That's Larry Bird."
They're going nuts.
That's Magic and Bird right there.
Yeah, man. They're going nuts over the forum. And a little bit before my time, so I didn't really get it. But they were like, "Man, there's the forum. Can you believe it?" They're there with their phones, like, taking photos. And I'm like,
that was neat, man.
Damn arena, man.
Yeah. Well, that was, you know, I went to Staples Center to say, did you guys go that Friday night? I went to see the Hawks play the Lakers.
No, we went. But that next night's when me and you and BA went to Hollywood.
Yeah. So, whew, y'all had me in some spots there.
We went to the Frolic Room, baby.
Yeah, golly, man. I was like, "Jake, where you got me, man?" So it was awesome. It was like, yeah, that's the forum, man. I grew up watching those games, the Pistons playing the Lakers there. Obviously, Larry Bird playing the Lakers there. That was showtime right there, the Lakers, for sure.
All right, man. Well, we're going to – this is a little bit shorter than a normal Bark After Dark, because you started with us. You started at the very beginning, and we're going to have you on a lot more on this stuff, and we'll get on. We'll tell some more stories and have a good time, dude.
But, yeah, we got to do the wrestling one, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, we're going to do a wrestling pod. Hey, if you could get Arn Anderson to come on with us.
Oh, my God.
Is he cutting keys at the Great Value?
Come on, you can get Arn Anderson on the show.
I could get Arn Anderson.
Oh my God, dude, I'm going to freak out if you get Arn Anderson on the show.
So I'll tell you my Arn Anderson story. The night OJ ran in his Bronco, I sat in a booth with Arn Anderson in Rome, Georgia, at a bar called Bogey Joe's, and we drank pitchers of Miller High Life, and it was like, is he going to make it or not? And Arn Anderson ordered about 75 pitchers of beer. And we were watching on those big white, those big wooden, big screens, you know, that kind of sit on the floor. So I sit there with Arn Anderson. That's the first time I'd caught up with him. He knew my aunt and uncle and dad, and he knew all them. So he knew me when I was a little kid. He was like, I can't believe, you know, like you're growing up and everything. So he sitting in a booth with him, man, and watched OJ running the Bronco. So me and Arn Anderson, I almost got a tattoo the next day. I think I peaked that night, to be honest with you.
I'm serious. Listen, there are very few people you can get on this podcast other than Arn Anderson that would make me like fangirl out.
You think I got stories? Could you imagine the stories he's got?
Oh, I can't even.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Can we just start a whole separate podcast with Arn Anderson?
Charlotte Brooks definitely knows what he's talking about. Shout out Joe Holbrook. That was Bogey Joe. He owned a bar in Rome. And there's many of Georgia staff have had a few hydrations in that place.
Well, listen, this ain't the last time you're going to be on Bark After Dark. It won't be, and we haven't spent our last night in Rome. We're going to get over there at some point too. Go to the courtyard. I think we made it go to the courtyard.
We're going to have to do like one of those live shows, like where we're all sitting round table, man.
Hey, yep. when you buy that boat you were telling me you're going to buy yesterday, we need to get on the. We'll do a live from the boat in the river.
Yeah, like y'all seen Water World of Smoker Crafts, Kevin Costner? That's what I'm doing. I'm a smoker craft, man. So,
all right, but hey, go get you some sleep, man, and get ready to put some good stuff up tomorrow at Dogs HQ.
What time you got me putting this up? Like, what time are you expecting it?
Well, just any time after you do that meet and greet from 4 a.m. to 6 at Giggity's in the morning.
I'm getting into my nap time. I mean, are killing me.
We love Rusty.
Jake was like, hey man, you'll be end of the day, you'll be done. Let's knock out a pod at 9 on Monday. I was like, hell yeah, that's a great idea. About 3 o'clock day, I was like, what in the heck are they done, man?
I'm just glad you survived Orange Theory today, man.
Dude, I had to go to Orange Theory today. I had to have 1 hour just like whew. I had to let it out, kind of steam there for a minute. So got back in the car and had 250 missed calls and 1,700 text messages.
None of them were from me. I didn't bother you.
No. I called Jake Rowe for a window. I said, look, dude, I need an hour. You know, if Garrison Hurst comes back for his last year, you're going to have to break it because I'm out. I'm out for an hour. So it was good, man. It's a great day. Good, man. It's so good to be with you two guys and our team, Palmer and Wes and you know, Chad doing some stuff with us, but it's humbling, to be honest with you, what happened today. And very, very excited about the people there. And, you know, Shannon Terry, who is a person that we all have hitched our wagon to, you know, he's hitched our wagon. We've all hitched our wagon to him, and I have too. And, you know, made some videos today of me, but I want to take this time to say that, man, everybody brings something to the table. And when I look at the pieces of the puzzle, when I looked at this thing and how can we make this site the one that people want to go to? Because let's be honest, I've said it before. It's a great market now. This is a great freaking Georgia market. And Georgia recruits good and Georgia's winning games. So, you know, there's a lot of people there. But I think we're different than a lot of people. We've got connections. We've got creativity. And, you know, we're just dudes, man. We're hanging out on the boards like you are. And we want to talk Georgia football and recruiting. We want to talk wrestling and this Bark After Dark that y'all have got me damn locked into right here. So, you know, it's exciting times, man. And anything what we saw today is any indication of what's about to happen here. Whew, this is going to be a huge place. It's going to be a fun place, more importantly.
Buckle up. It's going to be a little smoother ride than the Ninja at Six Flags, but it's going to be awesome.
What about the roller coaster? What was that? Great American. What was that?
Scream machine, baby.
Oh my God, dude.
He's run that thing backwards every now and then. God, we can go on so many different rabbit trails. We got to get out of here.
Yep.
Hey, go get you some sleep, man. Well, I'll probably end up talking to you after we get off the air. All right, y'all. Hey, it's been Bark After Dark. This won't be the last time Rusty's been on. We're going to have some more good guests coming up. So y'all take it easy.